time of year in August. So that would make sense as a possible mode. Yeah. I'm sorry I didn't have a recording going. I usually don't bother, though. I think the website I'm using has the capability of doing it. But, you know, I mentioned the time and frequency just because some serious DXers do record all their contacts these days. So when some DX station that's only on once every couple of decades says, "I busted your call, too bad," they can play in recording. You know, I think some DX positions honor busted calls requests, some don't. But anyway, so I know some people record the contacts they care about. Anyway, unfortunately, I did not record it. It would have been good to have the recording, because recordings of the phenomena, I'm sure, are especially rare. Anyway, it's interesting. I'll see if the experts agree with me or not. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to next week, and you telling me what kind of response you got. I kind of record everything. I kind of got into that habit rather early, and usually multiple copies, because the hard drive capacity is relatively cheap. So I have a lot. I even record the 10-meter net. It's kind of I haven't looked at it in months and so, but it should be where I left it. So it's a shame you didn't record it. It would be kind of fascinating to hear.
Something I even thought of until after that happened, and I'm like, wow, I wish I'd recorded it. It really hadn't even occurred to me. Oh, well, anyway, you don't seem to have any of the serious propagation types on here now, so kind of move on to something else. You know, I also came across a sort of solution to something you'd asked me about a long time ago. We discussed the dark mode on Windows 11, and you mentioned that the dark mode wasn't really good. Go ahead.
I don't know if my opinion was it wasn't particularly good. It's an interesting additional feature. I haven't used it in probably a year or two, but I don't have anything particularly against God mode. It gives you the more options to screw things up and to fix things. So, you know, six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Yeah, I really like it. Yeah, I do see some problems with it, I like it because it makes the screen quite a bit easier for me to see in some cases. But anyway, I found that I can actually get, if you use Chrome, there are some dark mode plugins, Chrome called them extensions. I think they're more commonly called plugins now for Chrome that seem to work reasonably well. It's kind of cool. Go ahead.
Okay. I mean, what do they do? I mean, I still call them extensions because, I mean, if you go to the menu, they're called extensions. So I'm just continuing to do that. I use a bunch of extensions. The problem with extensions is very often they expire and they're no longer functional, and you get these little messages that say, by the way, these five extensions have expired, and would you like us to delete them from your cache? And and also others just keep bugging you, saying, we've ad blocked you for the 357th time. Wouldn't you like to pay for this service instead of taking it for free? So I mean, some of them can be slightly annoying.
What are they calling it? Midnight Dark Mode or something. I'm probably confusing it. And anyway, one of them says it's only a 3-month free trial. And I'll see how expensive it is when the free trial winds up, whether I want to buy it. Another one I did pay for a while was Speechify, which I really like. And they were charging me a lot of money for a while, and I think they stopped charging me for it, which is kind of cool. I was using it in free trial mode for a while. It was getting very annoying, and I really liked it, so I eventually paid for the subscription. Anyway, yeah, but you're right. I know the one that expired that doesn't work anymore was a tiny URL. That's one you probably used, right?
Yeah, I use that a lot. It makes my life a little bit easier. I don't like these long-winded links.
Yeah, well, the tiny URL extension I had on Chrome, it did just what you said. It said, hey, this doesn't work anymore. Do you want us to delete it? Which I did, since I very rarely use it. Are you using a different one, or did you have the same thing, which just kind of stopped working?
No, I go to the page. I have the bookmark listed, and when I'm handing out links and such, it opens up that page, and it gives me 1,000 links a month for free. I haven't gone past maybe about 20 in a month.
Okay, so the Chrome extension is gone, but I can still go to the tiny URL website and generate them if I need them?
Yes. It's quite simple. If you need the address, I'll email it to you.
I suppose if I just Google tiny URL, it'll give it to me now.
Yeah, I happen to use Bitly. I don't know exactly what the deal is with tiny URL, but they serve the same exact purpose.
Oh, okay, Bitly, right? I didn't realize it wasn't the same thing. All right, so just do Bitly and I'll get to Bitly.
Yeah. That should work for you.
Okay, I haven't needed it very much, but every so often I want it, because most of the time, especially when I want to send somebody a link, I don't want to put the very long link in the email. I can just do, you know, click in Gmail, click the little link tool, and create a link with a, you know, a text thingy and do it that way. So the link is under the hood, so to speak. Go ahead.
Yeah, and going back to that other application, I have a regular application. I think it's called Cure Your Eyes. I assume it works similarly. As the night comes on, it adjusts the brightness so that it's not quite as bright as it is in the middle of the day.
I think I've tried that on my phone. I'm not crazy about it, but because I need high contrast to read, so that doesn't work that well for me. But anyway, okay, that is handy to know that Bitly will work. Another thing I used the other day, sorry about that. I don't know what I leaned on there. I needed to work on a document with a client, and she said, here, click this Google Drive link for shared documents, and that worked a lot better, just getting on the phone with her and working on the shared document than not having to screw around with a screen share in the Zoom. Go ahead.
Yeah, sometimes these products improve over time. The problem, especially with Google, is you know, Google takes, gives, and then Google takes. And for no apparent reason, they just kind of get bored of the project and they cancel it, and it goes, disappears. So enjoy it while you can, because you can never kind of depend on Google to maintain stuff over the long haul.
Yeah, well, you know, the problem I have is that Google Docs are supposed to be compatible with Microsoft Word. I had a problem with it a couple of years ago where somebody sent me a Google Doc, they wanted me to work on it. And for some reason, when it converted to Word, the F7, the spelling and grammar checker, would not work. And it was a big problem not to be able to properly proof the document.
Oh, well, sometimes conversions and alternate software don't work perfectly. Again, you know, if you give it enough time, hopefully these guys will get it right in the long haul, but probably not in the short haul.
WS2N.
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, one vote for Google Docs. I'm very happy with it. But I'm not converting that over to Word or the other way around. But Google Docs in general, it's really terrific. I use it every day.
Yeah, it's very functional. The problem is when you're trying to move from one type of protocol to another type of protocol, and everyone's kind of changing their protocols as time goes on as well. So they could have gotten it perfectly right the first time, and then Microsoft could have played games with it, because Microsoft is even worse. Microsoft, for some odd reason, Office had a very good mail client that they broke into 1,000 pieces. The new one has been defeatured. A lot of mail merge doesn't work anymore. There's a bunch of things that it used to be able to do, and they keep on wanting me to upgrade to the broken one.
Okay, so what do you use for processing?
I still use Microsoft Office. I bought it a long time ago, and I just got used to it. The old one's fine. It's eventually I'm sure they're going to make it impossible to run the old one. Then I'll have to rethink where to put things.
Okay, I get it. Yeah, anytime I send anything out or I run it through Google Docs, no problem. Good at saving stories and websites and pictures, and, you know. And, well, for the first, I think it's what, 15 gig, you know, three anyway. So, you know, you just got a lot of text and everything. You know, you could use it for years without getting charged. You know, you get videos and all, you know, then all bets are off. Back to you, Roy.
Yeah, I have G Drive. They gave me, I don't know, something like five or six gigabytes for free, and I've been using that for years and years and years.
Okay, I didn't want to take it away from Frank, but back to you, Roy.
Okie doke. Back to you, Frank.
Yeah, that's quite all right, Paul. It's useful. What is G Drive? Is that Google Drive or is that something else?
No, it's plain old Google Drive. It's very nice. It's very simple, and it's my file repository of choice when I have to share files among people. In the old days, I would just attach them to the email client, but most email clients these days get very persnickety if you put too big a file attached to its email. So I just send links. I put them in my G Drive and I rename them using Bitly, and it all works nicely together.
W2R1.
Yes, David.
Good evening. I hope you're having a fantastic night. Do you know about a RAID drive? RAID drive? Supposedly they're faster in terms of data transfer than just regular hard drives. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm extremely familiar with RAID drives. They're not really designed to give you that much speed. They're designed for safety of not losing your drives. It's primarily used in redundancy. So there's different. There's RAID 1, there's RAID 5, there's RAID 6. There's a whole bunch of different RAIDs, and then there are other protocols that are similar to RAID as a concept, but they can be either proprietary or they could be open source. The biggest benefit of RAID, and I have a couple of network-attached storage devices that carry terabytes and terabytes of data, and if one of the hard drives in the array, they have sometimes five, sometimes six, they come in different sizes. If one of the drives fails, there's enough redundancy that you pull out the failed hard drive, put in a new one, and it will rebuild that particular drive based upon the redundancies of the whole set of drives. That's what RAID is.
Yeah, the older RAID drives connect to the computer. One side is ESAT, the other side is USB 3. And stacks of G-Tech drives and Glyph drives and a whole bunch in the closet. Go ahead.
Yeah, that's just different communication protocols. eSATA is serial attached data, as opposed to older hard drives use parallel interfaces, and USBs are very serially. But depending upon which USB, it's could be very slow to reasonably fast. Nowadays, there's new kind of protocols that are used to transfer data across the sundry buses of PCs. But those are different protocols for just transport of data streams in and out of the hard drive.
Roy, you're talking about PCs. I'm talking about Mac. Mac, from the very beginning of Mac computers that could render photographs, you know, and what to say, the connection is just these drives are connected to a hub, and you can turn them all on at the same time, and you can access each one. They seem to work pretty good. We're really old.
Yeah, well, I mean, it depends on what speed you need. If you need the fastest speed, you need new hard drives. But all hard drives utilize the same transport protocol. It doesn't matter with the operating system. The different operating systems have different drivers for them, but their operating hardware protocols are standardized across all the different operating systems, be it Linux, be it Unix, be it Apple, be it PC. They all use eSATA, and all the other protocols are shared.
Well, the computer I have now, you know, you can get a lot of connectivity through a hub because the drives are old and slow, and there isn't so much data being transferred. That the new computer has USB 4, it was a FireWire 4, and USB 3 connection with a lot faster connection than any of those hard drives. Maybe even that can be put together and connected to one USB 3 port.
Yeah, modern transfer protocols. Very often they double the speed with every generation. Sometimes they increase them even more. So the protocols get better from USB 1 to 2 to 3 to 4. There's no more FireWire as far as I'm aware. This Thunderbolt, which these days uses the same connector as USB-C, except it has a little lightning bolt on the package. But they all look like USB-Cs these days, for the most part. You know, there are other esoteric. eSATA still is a protocol that some hard drives use either directly or as a backup port.
Well, to connect a Thunderbolt I can't think of the name of that thing. You know, the very basic FireWire connection, FireWire 800, FireWire 400, you know, you need one adapter, and then you need another adapter. So there's two adapters that you need to connect FireWire 400 or 800.
Again, you're kind of talking old technology. I mean, back 15 years ago, Apple was promoting FireWire. One of the Flex Radios protocols was FireWire. And has caused people somewhat difficulty because they have to find old adapters that plug into PCs that accept FireWire. Nowadays, every device that comes out of the manufacturer are either USB-C or Thunderbolt. You're not going to find any equipment, as far as I'm aware, that uses a FireWire protocol transport.
QSL. But I do have one adapter, and it connects FireWire 800 to Thunderbolt 1 or 2. And then you need a Thunderbolt 1 or 2 to 3 adapter, and then you can connect that.
Yeah, but basically it's because you're operating a legacy device that's 10 plus years. And, you know, when Apple was kind of dedicated to using FireWire as a high-speed data transport mode, like I said before, everyone's kind of moved on to either Thunderbolt or USB-C, and they use the same port, so the only difference is if you squint and look at the object, you'll see a lightning bolt if it's a Thunderbolt. And then there are different Thunderbolt protocols. There's Thunderbolt 3 and there's Thunderbolt 4. Thunderbolt has the highest bunch of requirements. You cannot, unless you have a very special cable, you can't run a cable more than about 6 feet using Thunderbolt. Because at least with Thunderbolt 3, they might have improved it with 4. I haven't had that much experience with 4. But 3, if you go beyond 6 feet, you're lots of luck. It won't work unless you kind of have a dock as a amplifier between the two lengths of wire.
A Nikon slide scanner, transparency scanner, and the output is FireWire 400. You know, when I have to scan, I want to do a lot of scanning, then I have to use an old computer, which is the best thing. The old computer works with the adapters that I already have. You know, there's this other scanner for transparencies. It's almost like a drum scanner. It's made by Hasselblad. It's called the Imicon scanner. And I think they recently stopped making them, you know? And, 15,000 scanner, and the output was FireWire 400.
Okay, I mean, there's all kinds of input-outputs. If you remember, very early printers had Centronic parallel interfaces. There was a delightful interface for transfer called SCSI. It was SCSI. I had devices that I needed to plug in through SCSI cables. So, you know, the history of computers are filled with all kinds of very annoying cables. I'm very pleased. Presently, we've gone very, very serial instead of parallel because we no longer need those ribbon cables that used to be hanging off the back of computers back in the good old days.
Well, you know, it's good to have conversations about it. Like if you call Apple or some other company and you have conversations about it, you know, and somehow the things that you are talking about this become reality, and somehow you contribute to the world of computing and creative computing and the progression of the technology, and it'll be part of that whole thing.
Okay, whatever floats your boat. I generally don't like chatting with technical assistants because, unfortunately, I end up telling them what the solution is because I keep trying things while I talk to them on the phone, and they often are not terribly useful. Occasionally, there are some useful people, but a lot of them aren't. I don't know. Certainly about connectors. I don't know if I'd have that much fun on the phone discussing connectors. I occasionally lapse into conversations with some people of what is the worst connector they ever had to deal with. In my case, the worst connector I hated was S-video cables. They were plasticky, and they had little tabs that you couldn't really line up because you had to basically cover them up to get them anywhere close to being connected. And if you didn't align them right, it didn't work, and you could break the pins. I hated S-video, and I'm glad to see it gone.
Well, for your radio, you know, you got to make sure that your jumper cables are functioning. You know, a lot of times the jumper cable, it becomes loose or it disconnects or there's some problem with it. And then the other thing is to make sure that your contacts between your port and your connectors are clean and deoxidized. You know, and then I think, you know, you'll have very good luck with it.
Well, I mean, it's always good to check on things. I haven't had that much problem with Ethernet cables. I assume that's what you're alluding to with the term port, but there are other things that have ports, I guess. Generally speaking, I haven't had that much problem with dirt or oxidation, corrosion. Power poles are kind of infamous, unfortunately. It's always a good practice once a year or so to kind of disconnect them and reconnect them, and that tends to kind of rub against themselves and scrape off any kind of possible corrosion. What happens is usually corrosion kind of sets in slowly, and then there's a local increase in the resistance, and there's a local increase in heat dissipation, and these things are kind of springs that are bound by plastic that gets soft when it gets hot. So I've had a power pole actually fail that way, where the corrosion produced an increase of heat, and it melted the plastic case, and the spring unsprung.
KG2RY, I'm talking about a PL259SO237. That connection, you know. If you're using a barrel connector, you're connecting two PL259 connectors into that each side of the device. You know, make sure that you know the connections are good.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I wouldn't call them ports though, but okay, yeah. Every so often, when something goes wrong, I try loosening and retightening the coax connectors. It's never been the cause. I had a problem about a month or two ago with my linear amplifier that I would push the talk and I would get the amplifier running, and it was fine. And then about 40 seconds later, all of a sudden, it would cut out the amplifier and just pass through the drive power. And one of the things I thought was that there was an antenna problem, which there wasn't. Another was that there was some kind of corrosion or intermittent in the cable and the connectors. There wasn't. It was just a matter, actually, in the end, of the linear amplifier kind of aged, and it was triggering the overdrive power, unfortunately, without really notifying anyone. You know, it just sensed that the 12 watts was too much power for the drive and put it back in the drive level. And all I had to do was change the setting on the linear to have the driver on the transmitter feed 11 watts instead of 12 watts, and it's behaving very nicely. So that was another case where I tried to fix it by cleaning up the coaxial cables and connectors, and that wasn't the problem at all.
Roy, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. I was saying that, you know, a lot of times the connection is weak, you know, so the SWR is high and the signal is low, you know, but just a little bit of deoxidizing spray can fix everything.
Yeah, I like deoxid. I've mentioned many times before, it goes a long way. You don't need that much that often. So a can last you 10 years, and I still have the can that I bought about 5-6 years ago.
QSL. Yeah, for RF, I think it's very good. And anyway, so what else is going on?
Nothing much, just another night on the Limark Technical Net. We had a 10-meter net this morning, and although a gentleman from Minnesota emailed me saying that he heard me, we only really talked to very, very local people in Brooklyn. I don't even think we had anyone from Queens today.
QSL. Yeah, I like that net, Roy.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I like doing that net. I wish there were more people to kind of interact with. Unfortunately, some Sunday mornings are kind of slower than others.
QSL. I had my radios off this morning, so I'm sorry I did not attend your 10-meter net, but I will try next time.
Okay, very good. I appreciate people who check in. That's what makes or breaks a net. Unfortunately, this is not a good era for nets, generally speaking, except for those that are on internet-based kind of gateways where everyone through the country can listen in. So that at least kind of adds a few extra people to the play. But with RF alone, it's kind of difficult. I'm very thankful for all the people that listen in and participate to this technical net. But we're kind of the exception to the rule. Most nets kind of stagger along.
ACTPL checking in.
Ah, welcome again, Jeff.
Just checking in. Trying to rack my brain for anything intelligent to say.
Okay, I have a lot of I know you'll come up with something.
You know, there wasn't so much activity on the ham radio bands. Seemingly, a lot of noise and very little signal.
Well, like all things, it depends upon the band, it depends upon the time, it depends upon whether there's a contest or not. I mean, one of the sure things to get things moving is to have a contest, because there's more than enough people who want to get their points out there, so they'll be active. If people kind of just sit there and look at their radio in the off position across a crowded shack, you know, it doesn't really produce much in the way of contacts.
KG2RY. QSL, I'd say like in the last 30 to 60 days, 20 meters has been open, on, and off. There's some activity there, but you got to look for it, listen for it. Most of it was at night or in the evening. Recently, most recently, which may be like 3 or 4 days ago, 17 meters opened up, made two contacts, one Slovenia, one Switzerland, on 17 meters. But 10 meters has been kind of blank.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. Unfortunately, the smarter guys out there say it's geomagnetic storms that are just kind of disrupting the entire structure of F1, F2. So it doesn't matter if the ionosphere is ionized. It's not in the proper structure to produce reproducible refractions and give you sky wave propagations that are proper. So it's just kind of like earlier tonight I mentioned, it's like you take a lens. Lenses are refractive materials. You know, they refract light, they bend it in order to serve the purpose of whatever that lens is designed for. It's like you take a nice glass lens and then you drop it on the ground and it shatters into 100 pieces. So you still have the glass, you still have refraction, but you've lost the structure in order to accomplish the feat you want with the lens. So that's sort of, unfortunately, what's going on with F1 and F2 these days. Hopefully, around the fall, the geomagnetic aspects will calm down and the F1 and F2 layer will reestablish itself and we'll have decent propagation until next spring.
You know, around 10 o'clock at night on 20 meters, there's activity. People calling CQ from different parts of the world. And you can contact them. However, you know, the signal strength isn't really as good as when the band is, like, totally open, you know. But, you know, only for maybe an hour, 2 hours, and then the signals just fall into the noise. You know, it's like temporary openings on 20 meters.
Yeah, I mean, 20 meters is usually more of a daytime band than nighttime, so it may have something to do with the really weird nature of the ionosphere this particular year. Maybe it energizes, even at night, there's some significant residual ionization of the E layer that manifests as these kind of sporadic propagations. That's my best guess.
QSL. Well, you know, there has been some good contact possibilities. A lot of them in the Middle East. Some countries I never worked before, you know, and some of them even for conversation, which I know you like to have. Go ahead.
Yeah, I tend to be a rag chewer by nature.
QSL. Yeah, but, you know, I tell you honestly, I'm not very good at leading any technical discussion. I can only interact with someone.
Well, I mean, you don't necessarily have to lead in the dance. You can follow as long as the other person is willing to lead. So I can kind of take on either positions as I need to. But, you know, it's not that difficult. It's, you know, sometimes people are very, very concerned of what the other guy thinks of them based on what they say or how they say it or what have you. I guess I don't care. I don't know. It never really concerned me much. I mean, before I got my license, every so often I wondered, you know, I knew enough guys who have mic fright that I was wondering, gee, I wonder if I'm going to be one of those guys who's just very timid and not really opening to talk and would just kind of sit there and listen. That would be it. I mean, I've told people repeatedly that if anyone kind of told me that I'd be here tonight when I first got my license, I kind of would think that they were crazy. But life works in mysterious ways.
Well, like the 20-meter band opening and closing, and how to say, unplanned and unknown, and not according to what people know. It's sort of like the unexpected thing, you know, that life can be like that.
AC2GS. Well, I mean, I think one of the more important aspects of amateur radio is the unpredictability of it. I think the opposite is a cell phone. You kind of expect the cell phone to work 100% of the time. But, you know, having had any experience on the HF bands, you know that sometimes they're open and sometimes they're closed. There's very little in the way of being able to definitively predict it until you hit that microphone button and see if anyone comes back at you. So I think it would kind of ruin, it would destroy the hobby. If you had some kind of magic electromagnetic mode that was 100% reliable and predictable, I think the hobby would collapse it on itself because there would be no more challenge. It just is an expected thing to work. And, you know, what's the fun in that?
What do you know about a dumb phone?
You've kind of talked about it in the past, as opposed to a smartphone. It goes back to temporarily to before the days of the iPhone and these sophisticated applications that run. Dumb phones are simply designed for telecommunication and little else. They might have a phone book. They might have a little adding machine. You could do some simple math maybe, but they try to not have too many distracting. They don't have web applications or, you know, endless number of applications that run on them. They make them dumb and more energy efficient. Since you only use it to talk on the telephone, you're not going to waste it looking things up or sending text messages out.
Advantages of having a dumb phone?
Again, for people easily distracted, it's less distracting and tends to be somewhat more efficient as far as it lasts longer than a multifunction phone would, simply because you're using it for only really one purpose.
Tell me, is it true that there's minimal hacking, tracking, and marketing on a dumb phone?
Well, it sort of depends on how dumb it is. But if it's dumb done right, yeah, you don't have any of the features that can be hooked together. There's lots of modern-day features. Cell towers can detect where you've been and when you've been. I was listening to something about Epstein, of course, and some people bought the data from the telecommunications of the nearby cell tower to Epstein's Island. So they were able to actually identify a whole bunch of people who visited the island just based on their cell phone usage.
KG2RY. Well, you know, you have a system update, operating system. And the only thing really valuable about the update is the security. But, you know, how in a smartphone, you know, it is so, public, it's not private.
Well, we've talked many times in the past that there's really no such thing as privacy anymore. You're tracked even if you block it and you're not accepting cookies and you're using a VPN and you're using 5 or 10 other little things. They're still able to recognize who you are, and they follow you. And you, even with the best setup you got, eventually, you know, you go looking for a certain product, and then all of a sudden, Google keeps advertising that product for the rest of the day, indicating that it's kind of broken through your veil. So don't assume you have privacy, even if you spend time and money on different applications that promise to kind of block you. Most of the blocking is somewhat superficial, and smart guys know how to go right around it.
Well, some of it can be protection. You know, the right people are watching.
Well, again, it's sort of the way that locks and keys works. There is no lock-proof key. You're just trying to make your lock more difficult to pick than your neighbor's, so that thieves will just kind of look at it and say, the hell with it, and just move the next door to the simpler lock and pick that key. But in the end, if someone like the NSA or the CIA wants to break into your cell phone or what have you, there are means to do all of these things. iPhone thought that they were clever and they locked it out, but I think there was an Israeli firm that specialized in breaking the lock on iPhones, and they sell the technique to any law enforcement agency and even people that might not be quite law enforcement.
KG2R1. Well, I'm doing some experimenting with the technology, trying to find out about it, and I have more than one device here, but I guess it's not such a big deal. I've got to be okay. There's this English scholar of Indian descent who said, no matter what happens in the world, no matter what happens to me, I'll be okay. I am okay with that.
Okay, that's a good sentiment, and I don't know exactly where it comes into privacy issues, but you know, as I've often said, that assume anything that you leave on forums or even an email is being posted in your local public library's bulletin board. You know, don't write something that you'll be a little bit embarrassed about in years to come, because these things can go around and come back at you.
QSL. Well, you know, there are some things that I need to talk about, and I've got to be okay with it. So, you know, if it is public, I guess it has to be okay. But how to get more, you know, from this technology, that's my question.
More of what?
More of the good and positive things. You know, like ham radio, you have an opportunity to talk to people anywhere in the world, basically, you know, what you want to do. And, I think it's significant. I think ham radio is an amazing hobby.
Well, probably if you polled people on the net here, you would get a very positive result. If you polled the average person walking on the street, you'd probably just get some confusion and people who didn't quite know what you were talking about. You know, we're a very well-held secret. You know, for a public world without any secrets, without any privacy, I think our club has a lot more privacy than it wants. The average person out there have a clue what we do. And the few people who have a clue often will kind of say, oh yeah, I had a great uncle who used to sit in the basement in his underwear and talk to the world in this big radio box that he had. So, I mean, and those guys end up, you know, writing things like Family Guy, and they put characters like that in the cartoons and give people a bad image of us. NCIS had a episode many years ago, I think it was about 8 years ago, where they got confused. They didn't understand the difference between a citizen's bander and a ham, so they had a, quote, ham who had a handle instead of a call sign, and he was supposedly under suspicion of having done a crime, but it turned out that he was just a harmless a kind of fool. And so it didn't really lend itself to complimenting hams either. So the media either doesn't know we exist or kind of treats us as kooks, unfortunately.
Do you know that the president of North Korea, Kim Jong-un, is a ham radio operator, and he has a call sign with 3 digits? You know, and I saw this thing, you know. I didn't never heard him, but it was just kind of interesting.
Oh, okay. This is the first time I heard about that. I'm kind of surprised that I never heard about it. The most famous rulers, if you will, that were hams, in my knowledge, is the previous king of Jordan. He was an amateur radio operator. He was very famous. I remember reading about him in QST. Okay. Meanwhile, I Googled if Kim Jong-un is a ham, and the AI overview, which is not guaranteed to be correct, said no. It says, no, Kim Jong-un is not a ham. This is likely a misunderstanding of the word ham, which can refer to either a type of meat or an amateur radio operator, neither of which applies to him based on his political role as the leader of North Korea, according to Wikipedia. So, I don't know. The AI overview disagrees with you.
Well, I keep my eyes open on the Facebook. I get some ham radio pages on my Facebook, see if it shows up again. But it was kind of interesting, you know, a 3-digit call sign. And what to say, I've never heard North Korea on my RF ham radio, HF RF ham radio. Maybe I would hear it on my digital ham radio.
Well, let me type it into a little Google and see. I would be surprised to find out that amateur radio is allowed to be used. North Korea is kind of locked as tight as anything could be locked. So I wouldn't imagine the powers that be would allow the civilians to operate without someone standing right next to them to make sure they're not transmitting anything that they shouldn't.
Comment.
Yes?
Okay, KD2YWQ. So the only people that have transmitted out of there are foreigners that have received permission, and when you Google it, you'll see the last guy, I don't recall his call sign, but was there for a year, and I think the last 3 months they shut him down. But as far as I recall, there are no ham operators. They've allowed a foreigner or two to come in, but you'll see it when you Google it.
Yeah, it's exactly as you said. It says, no, North Korea does not permit its citizens to operate amateur radio stations, although a few foreign visitors have received temporary permission to operate there in the past. The regime strictly controls communication, and there is no indication of independent ham radio operation being allowed. So, just as you said.
All right, enjoy the night, fellas. I'm driving.
Okie doke. Thanks for adding your information. So, David, don't believe anything you see in Facebook. Facebook is is a terrible, terrible place where bots are kind of trying to twist the minds of far too many people. You know, this is where dragons live, Facebook. So take everything you read on Facebook news with a couple of pounds, if not a ton, of salt.
QRZ.com and see what comes up.
Okay, tell me what you find. I'm willing to bet that it's either someone completely different or it just comes up that it doesn't exist on QRZ.
This is KC2TNT.
Maybe 6 to 8 different ham radio pages there. You see a lot of people that you know on there. And a lot of parks on the air and stuff like that. You know, I would think that that's pretty accurate. So we'll find out about it.
Okay, I mean, you know, it's not all wrong information, but enough wrong information not to particularly trust it. By the way, Ruben recognized. Good evening, Ruben. How are you?
Good evening, Roy. I got home at 9:05, and I've been listening. I was eating something, so I really could not key up. But I do want to check in. I missed the check-in. I know it starts at the beginning of 9 o'clock.
Yeah, no, we begin at 8 o'clock, and we really don't do check-ins. We kind of... I kind of model the present TechNet as the one that Dick ran for over 40 years, and he didn't do check-ins. He would, at the top of his technical net, he would say something along the lines of, I already know that there's a bunch of people listening to this, so you don't have to tell me you're listening. And he just wanted people to hit the push to talk if they had questions or comments.
Okay, copy. It starts at 8 o'clock. Okay. Yeah, I was outdoors, so I got home at 9:05, and I just been listening. All right, no problem there, Roy. Anyway, I'm just saying hello. This is Ruben, KC2TNT in Brooklyn, in the section of Greenwood Heights.
Okay, good to have you here, Ruben. I appreciate your participation.
Okay, no problem there, Roy. And good evening to everybody.
Okay, very good. Thank you for coming by and saying hello. David, any other comments you got?
Well, I'm looking here. I did a search for Kim Jong-un, ham radio operator, and I don't see the page that I saw last time.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I find it very dubious that he's a ham, again, because, you know, I read all these publications, and someone someplace would mention it. It just strikes me as a bit of humanity in this inhumane creature.
You turn on your radio at 11 o'clock at night on 20 meters, and you'll hear Russian stations, Lithuanian stations, Ukrainian stations, you know, some nights more than other nights.
Yeah, East Europe is not quiet. Even when the war first broke out in Ukraine, there were a lot of Ukrainian operators who were on the air, and there still are. East Europe is different. They haven't really kind of clamped down. I don't think they have a particular problem with their local amateur radio operators, but you have to understand that you know, even China, I don't think China has any significant amateur radio organization or a hobby allowed. But certainly North Korea is kind of a lockdown. You know, it's kind of almost as bad as Albania and other such places are. That you know, they don't give you any freedom. They very paranoid, and so I would be amazed and astounded to hear that North Korea, where, you know, a significant portion of the population is kind of allowed to starve to death, was given the right to operate radio stations.
Well, radio is a good hobby for anyone, and even the president of North Korea would probably find something good and useful in it for his own interest, you know. And here, you know, we have other things in mind, and so, you know, anything is possible. But I would say, whatever works for him probably should work for the rest of his country.